I feel there's been a period where I was working in a bit of a void, working through lots of feelings about being excluded.
I was really interested in those ideas as kind of the global reach that her work has without being sort of declarative about it. It's a very quiet nod towards possibility.
Welcome to Sculpting Lives with me, Sarah Turner.
And me, Jo Baring.
In this episode, we are exploring the career of the sculptor Veronica Ryan. Born in 1956 on the Caribbean island of Montserrat. We had another Sculpting Lives road trip, didn't we, Jo?
We did. We had the best time. We went down to Bristol, to Spike Island, to interview Veronica in her exhibition, Along a Spectrum, which is her biggest retrospective to date, isn't it?
It is, yes. Sponsored by the Freelands Foundation. It's an important moment in Ryan's career. And those issues about visibility, about how women sculptors and artists gain prominence and have exhibitions, how art history deals with them, writes about them. These are all issues that we really grapple with in this episode.
Well, it's so exciting. So we've come to Bristol, to Spike Island, to Veronica Ryan's exhibition, Along a Spectrum. And actually, we are lucky to be here with Veronica herself.
So can you describe the space that we've just entered?
Well, we've come into the first gallery that has beautiful sunlight, although when we started installing losing track of time, actually, the end of April, the weather was still overcast quite a lot. And so this particular space with the skylight, see, the light changes dramatically from day to day, and it's really nice seeing the variety of light and the way the light hits the work in different ways.
And just thinking about actually Spike Island and the history of Spike Island itself, can you talk a little bit about the impact of that, the historical research and the building that's had on the preparation and the work that you've made?
When I first came to Spike Island, I wasn't aware that it was a tea factory. And I found that really exciting because some of my previous work, I had been sewing tea bags together. I like the fact that they're like these little cushions and they're a bit like little pillows, which in a sense alludes to some of my earlier work, you know, pillow-like landscape structures. And so once someone said this, I went to the archives and looked up some of the documents about Spike and other parts of the country which have been formerly tea factories. And so I decided, how far do I want to pursue the research in that direction? So it was quite good just to have a sense of the history of the Spike Island, and that is this connecting dimension with some of my work. And then I decided, you know, I could become really involved with tea and its history, but wanted to keep a fluid conversation in the work.
Yeah, that it's not didactic.
Right, exactly. That there are, that the work hints and makes references to other, to a number of multiple paradigms, and it's a connecting threads between these various conversations that I'm interested in.
I suppose that's reflected in the title, isn't it? Along a Spectrum.
Exactly.
And already we're sort of jumping between different things, and
right,
the pillows and the seas, the organic forms,
right,
history.
Yeah, past and present. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Time and space and weaving moments. And so I'm interested in some of these moments that kind of refer to each other in time and space, and stitching on picking, and the backstory. So I think those are some of the kinds of connections of stitching as well.
Yeah. Can we take a walk? I do like that idea of this, like, refusal of perhaps like a linear history as well, that you seem to be interested in shuttling between not only past and present, but I guess the future as well, thinking like what's to come.
Right. Yeah, that's very interesting, thinking about the future, because thinking about time and space and black holes and so on, that kind of complexion, whether we're in a kind of mirage of time. And so are we in this moment, and how we're experiencing the past, the present, and how does that reflect a kind of other moment?
So someone who's recently written about Veronica Ryan's work and whose texts are included in the Spike Island catalogue is Professor Dorothy Price, who is at the Courtauld Institute of Art in London. And we spoke to Dot in the exhibition to ask her about Veronica's sculpture and how it interweaves the personal and the political, particularly through the materials that she works with. And we also asked her to tell us more about how we go about writing about Ryan's practice within the context of the histories of sculpture and British art more broadly.
So we stood in front of a piece called Hung from 2019. And it's this kind of tangled mess of fabrics, I think stained with turmeric. Yeah. And Dot, in your essay that you wrote for the catalogue for the Spike Island exhibition, you talked about how Veronica Ryan uses fabrics and materials in this kind of way that entangles history, that kind of pulls all sorts of things, whether it's personal memory, but also kind of speaks to bigger historical moments and concerns. And you use this work as a way in. Can you can you tell us more about, you know, your thought process as well as an art historian and writing about her work and her way of entangling histories?
Yeah, I can. I mean, it's a really interesting work because when I first encountered it, it was in a different form. It was looser than it is now. And I spotted it immediately as soon as I walked into the studio, and I asked Veronica, obviously, you know, what it was, how it was coloured, and she said it was stained with turmeric. And then she started to talk about turmeric, and she started to talk about the healing properties of food. So immediately we were into a sort of world of associations. But for me, of course, the turmeric also played immediately into this kind of stitched, which you couldn't, I mean, it's much more obvious in the way it's hung in the gallery space today, but in the studio it was hanging at the bottom, and you couldn't always see it in full. So this idea that the entanglement was visible but not visible, going in and out of view, was really interesting to me. And I immediately thought of these kind of entangled histories of trade and empire, the relationship with the East India Company, the fact that spices and tea in particular are very important in Veronica's thinking about matter, and matter and materiality are so important in her work and the way she works as well. And I was really interested in those ideas as kind of the global reach that her work has without being sort of declarative about it. It's a very quiet nod towards possibility. And I think that idea that her work always sits on this sort of threshold between possibility is quite significant to her practice. I think Veronica would agree with that in terms of her discovery that Spike Island used to be a tea packing factory. So for her, tea was already an important material, and she picks up these little tea bags from the airport, and so she drinks the tea, dries the bag, and picks the bag and restitches it into a new sculpture. It's about, I think, making new forms out of familiar forms, and therefore constructing new associations for them as well, I think. And that's quite important to her practice, I think, in particular.
We heard from Dot there about how Veronica takes things from everyday life, such as tea bags, and uses them not only as the matter of her sculpture, she actually uses tea bags as material, but also translates them into a kind of sculptural vocabulary, working across scales and forms.
Yeah, she doesn't just take man-made objects such as tea bags. She also uses organic things as well that you'd find in nature, like seed pods. And she was born on the Caribbean island of Montserrat, as you said earlier, Sarah. Imagery from that reappears in the work. And there's a little clue from what Dot said about how she picked up the tea bags at the airport. So Veronica travels a lot. And for many years, she worked and lived between New York and London. And that's something that we asked her to elaborate on. Can we talk a bit about travel, actually? Because I think that's really interesting. And also, I've read that you sometimes would carry pieces. You described yourself as a bag lady.
Yeah.
And sometimes would carry bits of bronze in your bag and transport them between New York and London. I love that idea. Can we talk a little bit about how that kind of impacts the work, that transporting pieces between time zones?
Yeah. I've just got a funny image of you at customs.
I know.
With all your car seed pods getting them out.
I know, it's true. I remember when a friend and I went to Nigeria, and when I just left the Slade, I tried to bring cocoa pods into the country. Of course, they opened this at customs, and they had rotted. At that point, they're always looking for people trying to leave the country with original artifacts and so on. And so in my bag, in my suitcase, all they had were these sort of rotten cocoa pots. And anyhow, I really like collecting. I collect things. I'm a bit like a magpie. I collect things all the time. And I quite like pound shops. And in New York, they're 99-cent shops. I quite like the way that particular kind of object does, as it were, evoke a kind of visual way that I might want to make something. So, for instance, this salmon pink tray is actually some kind of sieve, and I found there was only one in the shop. I wish there were more, because I particularly like this sort of slightly under the skin colour. So I'm interested in, you know, for a long time you would buy, when you looked at colour charts and so on, it would call this particular colour, it would call it flesh pink or something. And I like the idea, actually, it's more connected to what's happening under your skin, that, you know, kind of residual, thinking about interiority.
I'm just looking around the room and, you know, talking about materials. There's all sorts of different materials. There's different textures, there's different shapes, different forms. And in sculpture, we talk about materiality a lot. And I'm interested to know what that term materiality means to you.
I'm interested in materiality. I feel that there's a trend that's come back into vogue, in a sense, because I feel there's been a period where I was working in a bit of a void, and that I feel that this sort of interest in materiality is one reason people have been interested in my work over the more recent years. I think part of my training at art school, where you learnt to carve wood and weld and... But also how, at that point in art school, they're thinking about how, and stone carving and so on, how you could make a material look like a soft, you could carve or carve to make an area look soft or hard. And so at some point I started to think, well, actually I want to use materials that already have some of those qualities, rather than making sort of traditional materials evoke particular kinds of qualities. A whole period, a long period of years actually, where I was sending work out to people and then I wasn't getting any kind of positive responses to showing work. And I think, I suppose because I always make things, there were whole periods where I didn't have any materials or really couldn't, you know, when I was taking care of young children, the priority had to be making sure that their needs were taken care of. A lot of what I did was just continue working with things around me. But also I had to do quite a lot of work with working with my confidence and self-esteem, and working through lots of feelings about being excluded and evidence of exclusion. So there is a whole body of work that really addresses being excluded for various reasons. You know, if you've had moments where there's been some visibility and then all of a sudden there isn't any visibility. But I've also had a few people who have always been very encouraging. And I understand that any given time, if you have two people who encourage you to keep going and to keep working with what you've got, around you. So I like the idea of using actual stuff that you've got around you, but also internally using one's state to be the driver of continuing a kind of occupation.
It's really interesting to hear a sculptor talk so frankly about issues such as visibility and exclusion and how that makes you feel and how that impacts the work. And it's something that we asked Dorothy Price to pick up on.
One of the things we wanted to talk to you about as well is about how a sculptor like Ryan has been positioned, or not, within the histories of British art and British sculpture. And she's spoken about this sense of not belonging. And your work as a writer and an editor has been to address those issues of not belonging, thinking about the exclusions of art history, of the art world more broadly as well. But what is the kind of work that we need to do to reckon with this huge body of work? You know, if we're in this exhibition, it's, you know, it's such a significant exhibition. It represents a lot of history as well. So can you just talk through that process of writing and the work that art history has to do to tackle not only Ryan as a sculptor and her place within the art world, but more broadly as well?
I think it's both simple and complicated. So simply, it's you know, attending to the practice of people who have been canonically left out of certain accounts. And attending to them on their own terms, I think, is important. And I think the problem with a lot of particularly black women artists who have been left out of the frame is because their work brings a certain kind of sensibility, an aesthetic sensibility, and Veronica's, I mean, it's just, this exhibition is a testament to that, that isn't neatly categorised. And I think that's so therefore, and she's ploughed her own furrow, if that's the metaphor, irrespective of trends or, you know, fashions or whatever, and she hasn't tried to fit into boxes. And she's had to work really hard not to be subsumed under that sort of sociological discourse in which black British artists were so, for so long, misrepresented and not well served, actually. I mean, on the one hand, they were sort of made visible within sociological discourse, but then it was also enabled them to be sidelined as only issues-based artists and only identity issues-based artists, which, you know, identity is inherent in art production anyway, for whomever. Park that and let's reattend to the work in front of us. What do we see? How does this work signify within a trajectory of sculptural practice? And where can we think about that?
Thinking about those early years, can you tell us a little bit about how you first became interested maybe in sculpture, or you were drawn to sculpture or forms?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that early on, I think I must have always thought about things that you pick up. And I remember one of the earliest things at school in the infants, that the teacher making Christmas trees out of cotton reel and sticking a bit of fern. I don't remember having Christmas trees really, but I remembered how I liked the idea that you could have this suggestion of a Christmas tree just from a cotton reel, put a little twig in it. And I think also, just because my mother sewed, I remembered the first, or one of my early memories, is a patchwork cover blanket that my mum made. And I think that's one of my early memories. I must have been about 1.5, 2. And I love thimbles, and I like all the accoutrements around sewing. And those are some of the early things I remember, and pencils and matchsticks,
like that,
and
haberdashery.
Yes, exactly.
Even that word's brilliant, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
And all the things like that, yes, you know, evokes the like you say, the accoutrements, the things that you need. These little, almost like treasures, actually, aren't they? When you open up a sewing box, and And often if you have that memory of a mum or a grandmother who liked to sew, you know, those button boxes and sewing, they're like treasure chests, aren't they, for
exactly.
you as you're growing up?
Well, that's right. I mean, somebody asked me about my mother's jewellery box trinkets. My mother never wore jewellery, so you wouldn't... You might find a powder puff. I quite like the shape of those powder puffs. I must have a sense that they were always things that you held on to or held. I think I didn't grow up with lots of dollies. It was more to do with other kinds of things around. So I think I've had, that's where my early interest in three-dimensional structures comes from.
And it's so interesting, as we walk around, we can see the kind of the sewing and the stitching, and it's some of the stitches are in much darker materials to really stand out. And it's not only the stitching, I suppose, but it's also the language around sewing that's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And thinking about particularly something like unpicking, when you're, you know, you're very interested in psychoanalysis as well, and that's unpicking as a word that we, a verb that we use to now, to say, well, let's unpick what's going on here in your head.
Yeah. There's been quite... some quite traumatic stuff that one has to process, and so but I've wanted to make some of the investigation accessible visually, not that it just is a theoretical position, to make use of unconscious investigations and see what that says. When we were talking about materiality just a few moments ago, thinking about... So when I'm thinking about the work talking back to me, how far that's been propelled by unconscious motivations or unconscious memories coming to the surface. So I'm interested in what's feeding what. I was listening to somebody talking about collective... moments in our zeitgeist and, you know, psychological moments in a wider context. So the pandemic is an example of this, isn't it? How we've all been experienced different kinds of psychological states that we manage according to our backgrounds and cultural heritage and so on, and economic facility. But there are these collective kind of psychological moments that we all experience along a spectrum.
I think anxiety is a kind of strong theme in her work, actually, anxiety and trauma, and how then we as individuals, as humans, globally deal with anxiety and trauma. What are our mechanisms to cope with trauma, sort of psychically and materially? And I think those are the things that are really kind of interesting about her work. And her work is demanding. I think her work is demanding. It demands of the viewer. It's associative. It offers us little clues into how it might signify for you. But I think we have to also work with it to understand it as well. And so I think, you know, I know that for Veronica, the theories of Donald Winnicott are particularly important and telling, and particularly his focus on childhood and traumatic experiences and incursions, and the idea of the sort of transitional object for a child, and how the child externalises a sense of safety through a fixation on a specific transitional object. But what she's also interested in, I think, is, and in the way that Winnicott is also interested in it, is that what happens to that transitional object when the child feels safe, as the child grows up into an adult, and then what happens if trauma returns, what happens to the object. And a lot of her sculptural pieces, I think, speak to that thinking through objects in relation to trauma and healing.
Along a spectrum, the exhibition at Spike Island is her biggest exhibition to date, but she has had other residencies and exhibitions. She had a residency at the Hepworth Wakefield and the Art House Wakefield in 2017, and before that, in 1998-2000, she had a residency at Tate St Ives in Barbara Hepworth's studio.
Yeah, and we asked Veronica Ryan what it was like to engage with the figure of Barbara Hepworth and those histories of British sculpture.
My first experience of Barbara Hepworth was, you know, I forget, at school in some of these books, so Language of Sculpture, and she was one of the few artists represented, and of course Germaine Richier and Elizabeth Frink. And I remember just at school really being interested in Barbara Hepworth at that point, because you didn't see anyone else. I mean, I didn't know of any American women artists. Of course, we're just becoming more familiar with American non-white artists. But I was invited to respond to Barbara Hepworth in 1998 first, and I went to visit Tate St Ives. And at that point, I hadn't really carved in marble or stone. I learned to carve in wood. I think I was anxious about the notion of responding to Barbara Hepworth, and how I tackled that first invitation was travelling around the landscape that she was so moved by.
So in Cornwall.
So I got one of these bus trips where you got tickets that took you all over the place. Travelled around Zena and different parts of the countryside, Land's End, all the countryside going towards Land's End, and then the Penwith, where the quarry is. And so my feeling all the time was that I didn't feel I wanted to make work like Barbara Hepworth. It was more her life, the life around her inspiration. By the time I finished the residency at Tate St Ives, I was really interested in her overalls and what she had in her pockets. And so one of the pockets had a whisk in that she used to mix up her plaster. And then it had that original, the whisk itself was interesting because it had some of that original plastic, which was an interesting, the way it was made as very sculptural. And then she had other things. There might have been little notes on paper and a little tin. And so I think it's alongside Barbara Hepworth.
I love the way that Veronica talks about the fact that she works alongside Barbara Hepworth. She's not in her shadow, she's not influenced by her, she just uses Hepworth to think about her own making. And those are the sorts of subtle genealogies and relationships that are so often overlooked, I think, when thinking about particularly Veronica's practice, but other artists as well.
It's really interesting actually just articulating that, because it makes me think, you know, we have to have a history of British art that accounts for Hepworth and Ryan together.
So that's really interesting to hear Dot talk about how we might reimagine the histories of British art and change those narratives through thinking about particular practices. And I think part of that changing narrative involves how sculpture is encountered, the kinds of exhibitions we see, and how it's publicly displayed through our national collections as well, and the kinds of institutional support that artists receive.
Well, that's right. It's about the role of institutions and curators in giving opportunities to artists to intervene in those ways. And Veronica's actually got an intervention at the Hepworth Wakefield at the moment in the Hepworth retrospective. So when we were up there, we spoke to Abby Shapiro, assistant curator at the Hepworth, to tell us a little bit more about that.
Thinking about that wider context of artists who are women who make sculpture, there's a really great installation or intervention by Veronica Ryan upstairs as well, and perhaps we could talk a little bit about that and the Hepworths as a gallery, your mission to support women sculptors.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's one of the really exciting things that we can do in the programme, and having a museum dedicated to the legacy of a female artist is really being able to explore and support some of those ideas of what does it mean to be a female sculptor today, and you know, what kind of legacies are possible. And I think we had two commissions for this exhibition, and Veronica Ryan's piece was responding in a very personal way to time that she had spent at Hepworth's garden. So she cast some seed pods from plants that grew in Hepworth's garden, and she's made these beautiful bronze pieces, which you probably saw kind of enveloped in fibre, and she was actually knitting those in the gallery just this week while she was installing, and you know, kind of really having a hands-on kind of way in which that was being shaped within the space, which was really nice. And Veronica's worked with us before. This is the second commission of her work, and this kind of way in which she's bringing aspects of her own practice and materials and themes and issues, but also responding to Hepworth's work. And it's just such a lovely way of opening up Hepworth from a new angle to think about her work in a different way.
Well, as we're recording today, on actually the 1st of October, Veronica Ryan's public sculpture honouring the Windrush generation has been unveiled in East London.
That's right. It's a really major commission for her, isn't it? So it's made of marble and bronze, and the work depicts fruit and vegetables, and it's the first in a series of public works dedicated to people arriving from the Caribbean between 1948 and 1971. It's a significant statement for her, isn't it? And over the last 18 months, public sculpture has become hugely political. It's very much part of debate, of newspaper headlines. And it's something that we asked Veronica about, how she even begins to approach such a sensitive and a personal subject for her.
I was a bit reluctant when I was first invited to put forward ideas, because I didn't want to somehow become a Windrush artist, because and it's absolutely appalling what's been happening. People dying while they've been in this deported state, and people who were born in Britain and because they didn't have passports been sent to countries that they'd never been to in some instances. People having serious breakdowns and so on. And of course my parents came to England with me when I was a baby during that 50s. period. Of course, they started coming in the 40s, but you know, there's been a longer history of Caribbean people, African people, people from different diasporas in Britain, and so you know, I was having a lot of complicated feelings about what this meant. In the end, I felt that I could be agreed to be shortlisted, because I was thinking about, as a child, going to markets with my mother to buy fruit and vegetables. It was, so as well as Ridley Road Market, there's Portobello Road, and I think Shepherd's Bush was the other market I seem to remember you could get some Caribbean foodstuffs. But so that was, I felt that my recollections as a child shopping with my mother and often with my sister in the pushchair, that was where I could focus. And yeah, so there are these sort of quite complicated sort of resonances as to how my choice of how I wanted to represent the community in Hackney, because of course we used to, at one point we lived in Haringey, and then we'll go on that bus that goes through to Hackney. So yeah, it's a kind of myriad of experiences that connect up with my mum buying fruit and vegetables and fabrics and threads. And of course Ridley Road Market, and there's a mass sculptures are going to be on the steps just in front of St. Augustine Tower, which is also, I think, one of the oldest towers in the country. So I quite like, you know, moments of containing different histories. We were talking about earlier on about the past and the present and the future in certain ways, and different ways of, you know, evidence that people exist, and that the Windrush scandal is absolutely horrific. You know, people are still waiting to be compensated, and it's just too abhorrent, really. And so I'm not working in a void, unaware of politics, but I also think that the positive representation is a way to embody one's psyche, in a sense. We're talking about psychological resonances and representation, which could help to engender a sense of confidence and that you belong, and that there are signs and signatures of belonging. So that's some of the concerns around thinking about my fruit and vegetables.
So since we've done the recordings for this episode, Veronica's fruit and vegetables, as she calls them, have had a really great critical reception. And the writer and art critic Hetty Judah, who we interview for episode 6 of this series, has described them as the way public sculpture should be done.
Yeah, it's interesting to think why she says that. And I think it's something to do with the way in which people are interacting with these sculptures. They're not on plinths, they're on the street level. So you see kids kind of climbing all over them, people touching them, you know, interacting with them in a way that, you know, we're not allowed to do often in galleries. So I think through sculpture, we can see these new relationships being formed with the public. Thank you to all our contributors to today's episode, in particular the sculptor Veronica Ryan, and also Dorothy Price and Abby Shapiro. If you want to see any of the images we discuss in this episode, visit our Instagram feed at Sculpting Lives.
Join us next time on Sculpting Lives for an episode on Gertrude Hermes. This podcast series was written and presented by Sarah Victoria Turner and Joe Baring, supported by the Paul Mellon Centre for Studies in British Art, produced by Claire Lynch, with research support from Chloe Nahoon.